boardrooms of the most successful companies here in New York, who do you meet? Answer, men and women who played high school sports. Education-based high school sports give us more than athletes we can root for. They give us leaders we can depend on. Question, so where will we find tomorrow's leaders? Answer, high school sports.
This message presented by the New York State Public High School Athletic Association and the New York State Athletic Administrators Association.
Hey, Buffalo, Jim Rome here. You can catch me every weekday from noon until 3 right here on ESPN 1520. Bills Mafia, I see you working. You know I've got your back. Bring your A game. Call in. Join the program. Let the rest of the jungle hear from you. That's the Jim Rome Show weekday afternoons, noon until 3 right here on ESPN 1520.
Take ESPN 1520 with you anytime, anywhere. Download the radio.com app, WWKB Buffalo, a radio.com sports station.
The following is paid programming. Opinions expressed are not necessarily those of this radio station, its advertisers, or sponsors.
Welcome to Think Again with L. Nathan Hare, sponsored by the Community Action Organization of Erie County. If you would like to participate on today's program, call now, 803-1520. That's 803-1520.
All right, here we go. Think again. Think again. Welcome to our topic discussion program sponsored by the Community Action Organization of Western New York, still fighting the war on poverty, now going into our 54th year. Each week, we talk to you about issues, events, and trends affecting you right here and right now in Buffalo and the Western New York community, and in fact, connecting to communities all across the country. I'm your host, L. Nathan Hare, President and CEO of the Community Action Organization. Make us a part of your Saturday every Saturday at ESPN 1520 AM on your dial from 11 o'clock to 12 noon each week. Now, today's program is live, so you can call in. You can join our discussion. Hope that you will. Our number here again is 803-1520. That's 803-1520. I promised John last week that I would look up the actual personal and corporate income tax revenue that the country has received over the past several years to see the effect of the tax cut in December of that was passed in December of 2017. Here is the story. When I went through the records, I won't go through all of the detail, but you can go to taxfoundation.org and you can get this exact report. You will see if you look at 2017 and then look at 2018, that the year-over-year increase in personal income taxes was $134 billion for personal income taxes, and it was $20 billion increase in corporate income taxes. Here's what's interesting. When the tax bill was passed, the promise that was made by the Republican administration and by Donald Trump was that as a result of this tax cut, this massive tax cut, that the economy was going to grow so significantly that even though you're taking a smaller piece of the pie was going to get to be so much bigger that you'd end up with more money at the end of the day. Well, that didn't seem to turn out to be the case, right? When we kind of worked this out. If you go back to the year-over-year increases in personal income tax revenue from 2013 to 2014, it grew by $149 billion. From 2014 to 2015, $168 billion. From 2015 to 2016, $149 billion, and so on. So after the tax cut, the growth in revenue for personal income taxes only grew by $134 billion. If you had just left it alone, you would have added another $172 billion to the nation's revenue. Same thing with corporate income taxes. It grew every year over the course of the period, year over year, from 2013 to 2018. However, after the tax cut was passed in 2017, instead of seeing a significant growth, we only saw $20 billion growth in corporate income taxes. And so the point that I'm making is if you had just done nothing, you would have had a deficit of somewhere around $577 billion as opposed to a deficit of $779 billion in 2018. And the deficit for 2019, for the year that ends September 30th of this year, is projected to be somewhere in the area of $1,091 billion. That's a direct result of the lost revenue from the tax cuts. So even though John is right, if you look at just the actual number of dollars that were that changed in terms of revenue from corporate income taxes and for personal income taxes, revenue did go up. But revenue was already going up every year anyway, and the amount of growth in that revenue decreased. Here's what you have to understand. If you got a federal budget of somewhere around $4 trillion and you have a 2% inflation rate, that's an $80 billion increase that you're going to incur just because the cost of things simply go up. And the amount of money that we are generating from our tax base as a result of the Trump tax cut has actually gone down at the same time that we were fighting these additional wars, that we've gone from $500 billion for defense spending to $968 billion for defense spending. All of these things are cascading down on the United States and resulting in us becoming, for all intents and purposes, a debtor country. Let me go to another aspect of this. On the, just another quick point on this impeachment issue. I looked at a report written by Quinta Jurisic, and he refers to his report as impeachment is a refusal to accept the unacceptable. Think about that for a second. The article's title is Impeachment is a Refusal to Accept the Unacceptable. This was in the Atlantic magazine, May 23rd of this year. Essentially, he says, taking action against Trump is a rejection of the idea that nothing matters. In 1838, Abraham Lincoln gave a speech on the perpetuation of our political institutions, better known today as the Lyceum Address. Dwelling on the threats facing the American political structure, he argued that the United States was protected from foreign invasion. That's because we have the Atlantic on one side and the Pacific on the other side. We had a sparsely populated country called Mexico on the south side and a sparsely populated country on the north side called Canada. So the United States was fairly protected from foreign invasion. At what point, then, Lincoln asked, is the approach of danger to be expected? His answer was, if it ever reach us, it must spring up amongst us. It cannot come from abroad. If destruction be our lot, we must ourselves be its author and finisher. As a nation of free men, we must live through all time or die by suicide. Quinta Jurisic then argues from this framework. He says that the president of this country is unsuited to his office, talking about Donald Trump. That should have been obvious well before the release of the special counsel's report, but the text of the report, even with a smattering of redactions, makes Donald Trump's unfitness brutally clear. He shows no understanding of the responsibilities of the presidency. He delights in the use of his power. As Memorial Day approaches, he is actually reported planning to celebrate the holiday by pardoning, among other service members accused of war crimes, a Navy SEAL scheduled to stand trial for the murder of multiple unarmed Iraqi citizens. Unfortunately, the media in this country treats any substantive reaction to the grotesquely unethical, immoral, abusive, and illegal behavior of this president as if the people reacting are engaged in excessive overreaction to his conduct. This is how we have ended up with the president of the United States asserting that he will not be governed by the Constitution's authority. To have the House of Representatives oversee the executive branch faithful execution of the laws passed by Congress, and the president asserting that he will simply stop doing his job to execute the laws passed by Congress until Congress stops investigating his conduct. Just patently absurd. Richard Nixon passed laws that he was not necessarily a fan of, but that the country was behind during the course of his impeachment. His successful impeachment. So why in the world would Donald Trump think that he gets a pass and doesn't have to do his job at all because he's being investigated by the people that are empowered by the Constitution to investigate him? What Congress has been engaging in is righteous protest of the outrageous conduct and malfeasance of duty exhibited by this president. House Speaker Nancy Pelosi seems to buy into the Republican-inspired thinking that an impeachment inquiry will further polarize the electorate and cost Democrats needed votes to retain their seats in Congress that they won in 2018. My view, and I'm going to close on this, is that Democrats should stand firm instead of coddling or trying not to offend Trump supporters who won't vote for you anyway. Stand firm for something. Stand for strengthening the Affordable Care Act or replacing it with a more comprehensive health care system. Stand for resurrecting and strengthening the nuclear restraint agreement with Iran. Stand for recommitting America to its U.S. participation in the Paris Climate Change Accord. Stand for rebuilding or rehabilitating the caustic relationships that Donald Trump's administration has built with Canada, Japan, Mexico, and our closest European allies. Stand for building a proactive plan for addressing catastrophic damage due to weather and geological events. Stand for building a plan for putting Puerto Rico on a sound economic footing. Stand for eliminating the separation, caging, and then losing track of thousands of immigrant children. Stand for a proactive plan for reducing the flow of immigrants from Central America. Rebuild our nation's infrastructure. Commit to mining resources from asteroids, if that's where the resources are. Have all high school graduates commit to 2 years of military or community service in return for 4 years of undergraduate education. Commit to a Mexican-American Marshall Plan for the Central American and Mexico border, among other important things. Stand. That's what I would ask the Democrats to do. Let's get our first caller on. Let's get Tony in and get his thoughts. Tony, how are you doing out there? I hope I haven't been too preachy here. I just had to get some things off my chest for Memorial Day.
Yeah, I have a lot to get off my chest because last week I had laryngitis and I couldn't call.
Yeah, I heard.
I was sick.
Yeah.
But I'm not sick this week.
All right.
I'm going to tell you something right now inside of the Kremlin. I want everybody to pretend they're at a movie theater. Right now inside the Kremlin, there is a human being that was a CIA spy.
Mm-hmm.
Very close to Mr. Putin. Very, very close to Mr. Putin. And here's the thing. Back in September of 2016, the G20 assembled in a place called Hangzhou, if I'm not pronouncing it right, maybe John will help me. Mm. Hangzhou, China, I think it was.
Mm-hmm.
This was a historic meeting. It was the last time our president, my president, who I admire, was there. This president, because we had a CIA informant in the actual Kremlin, to this date, Putin has not identified this human being.
Mm-hmm.
Just think what Trump has told Barr to do. Here's what happened. Inside the Kremlin, this basically was a spy for mm-hmm. the United States who deserves a medal,
mm-hmm.
told the Obama administration in a very secretive way that the Russians were planning and were doing a cyber attack on our democracy,
yep.
that there would be a division. They were trying to divide, disrupt, and confuse the American people and totally interfere in the election.
Mm-hmm.
Our president, who stands taller than Putin by a few inches, went up to him, and the pictures were on a show last night. Went up to him, chin to basically his chin was up to Putin's forehead. Mm-hmm. And you know what he told Mr. Putin? I know what you're doing. Knock it off.
Mm-hmm.
If you saw the face of Putin, you would know, and you can ask anyone that saw those pictures on YouTube from Hangzhou, September of 2016, that we knew, and Putin knew we knew. That is where I'm going to divert. A month later, the Gang of Eight met later in September, in that same month towards the beginning of October. And they were given all the facts that the president had received from this spy that was in the Kremlin for the United States. That material was so sensitive that it was carried by couriers all the way from the Kremlin across the ocean by courier under guard to the president, our President Obama. He told Putin to knock it off. He also told the Gang of Eight. You know who the Gang? Tell me, Al Nathan, tell your audience what the Gang of Eight is.
So those are your top
senators.
Eight.
Senators.
Right.
Senators.
Right.
There are four and four that would see these documents. Now, how in the world can Barr or anyone doubt where the origins of the cyber, the investigation started? When all this is a record that's being held inside the building of the intelligence agencies. Do you see my point? We're going to try. If this ever got out, that guy and the woman in the Kremlin would be dead.
Right.
In 2 minutes.
Right. And so that's the core of the issue, right? That you would give Barr the authority for him to declassify information and then give that information into public forums that would reveal just by characterizing the information would reveal the source that that information came from and would definitely get that person killed. And it would kill our apparatus for understanding and monitoring things that are going on in Russia through that operative.
Right. In the Kremlin, next door to Putin. We have to know what he's thinking. Do you know that there's a book called The Assassins, which is written by a guy named Coons, who is a CIA operative. You saw it. You read it?
Yep.
Yeah. Well, on page 157, it says, basically, about Putin says in a statement that the West does not understand him and we don't understand Russia. And how can you deal with someone you can't understand? This is why Tillerson said Trump is nothing, did not prepare. My question to everybody out there is, there is a historical act that was passed by Congress that says whenever a president or any official of the presidency, vice president, engage in contact with Russians, Chinese, or that, there has to be a historical record. Right? Am I right?
That's absolutely right. And Trump has done many times. He's had
four times.
Meetings where there's no one in the meeting except the Russians, and we have to go to the Russians to have them tell us what took place in a meeting with Americans.
Yeah, but the point is we don't have a historical record. He's violating the historical record law.
Right.
In other words, when you ask him, what did you discuss? Oh, we talked about a lot of things. That's crap.
Right.
My last point is this. Do you remember a country called Austria?
Of course.
And do you remember that they were part of why we had world wars?
Right.
Okay. Do you realize that the Nazis are in control of that government?
And their party is in control. They're waging a massive political struggle for control of Europe right now, across Europe.
Exactly. And do you realize that because of what's going on in Austria, our intelligence agencies and every intelligence agency in Europe will not give them any information because of that?
You would hope.
No, they don't. They are not giving them anything.
Well, you never know, because you got people that are in the state apparatus of Austria that may be aligned with this conservative party. And even though they may not be elected officials, they're in positions to know things. They could be sharing information, you know, across the conservative party and sharing information with the Russians. We don't know.
Yeah, well, that's what's suspected. But what I'm saying is that no intelligence agency of any in the European continent or in the world will share information with Austria itself. My last point is this. Trump always talks about all of Obama's faults about executive orders, issuing executive orders, mm-hmm. right?
Right. He was the king. Obama was the king because he was issuing executive orders, right?
Okay. In all of 8 years of the Obama administration, he issued 276 executive orders.
Right.
You can find this right out in whitehouse.gov.
Mm-hmm.
I got all this information, you know, through my big research team. And guess what? That averages to 34.6 per year.
Right.
Mr. Trump at this time has issued 110 executive orders, not including his emergency orders, which are causing trouble in Yemen.
Mm-hmm.
Talk about Yemen. Right now, that would be an average of 47.2 per year.
Yep.
And by the way, he's trying to violate the Congress's law in Congress to sell $8.8 million worth of bombs to Saudi Arabia.
Well, a combination. It would be Saudi Arabia. It would be, I forgot, there are three other countries that are involved as
well. Yeah, because he's trying to avoid the Congress.
Right.
That's the bottom line. Do you know, right now, I found out through my great research team that in the country of Yemen, there is a, since February, we have had a cholera epidemic.
Yep.
That has hit the country. Besides the bombs that Saudi Arabia is buying to take and bombard the Yemenis people.
Mm-hmm.
In other words, there's mass medical need. Our country wants nothing to do with it because it's supporting Saudi Arabia.
Yep. Yep.
In a humanitarian crisis.
Right.
Last point is, we buried our dead soldiers so we who are alive can live.
Right.
We buried our dead. And do you know what? It's a disgrace that on Memorial Day we have a man going to put a wreath or whatever around the Tomb of the Unknown Soldier. This man didn't want to go to Vietnam, so he had bone spurs.
He was a draft dodger, right.
And a congressman called him out on it, right?
Yep, we're going to have to close it right there, Tony. All right, thanks, man. All right, listen, we got to take our first break so we can take care of our sponsors. If you all stick with us, we will see the other side of the break here at Think Again. Think Again.
Would you like to increase your home's value? Do you want to lower your energy bills? Are you in need of affordable financing for your next home improvement project? The CAO Home Improvement Resource Program can help. Just come to one of their monthly HIRP orientation sessions every first and third Wednesday of the month at two convenient locations. HIRP staff will help identify the resources you need to get financed, and they'll even help you with completing your application. Now, you won't know what you qualify for until you call 332-3773. That's 332-3773. Learn about all the home improvement programs you may be eligible for and ask about the affordable financing program that can help turn your house into your dream home. Call 332-3773 for more info. It's the Home Improvement Resource Program, restoring value to neighborhoods across Erie County, one house at a time. Brought to you by the Community Action Organization of Erie County.
We're the Comfort Home Improvement Team. Let us remodel your windows, help you build your dream. So many colors and styles that are sure to please. And comfort workmanship will put your mind at ease.
It's Comfort's 40th anniversary. Take 20% off all Comfort products and make no payments and pay no interest until 2020.
Home improvements and more. Comfort windows and doors.
Comfort windows can turn your dream home into a reality. Just ask any of our satisfied homeowners.
Well, I definitely recommend them to anybody because it's a no-brainer. You watch them install the windows, remove the old windows, put the new windows in. They're custom made to what your opening is, and you can see the work when they're done, and it's beautiful.
It's Comfort's 40th anniversary. Take 20% off all Comfort products and make no payments and pay no interest until 2020. Comfort, the name you know, the people you trust.
All day, every day. This is Buffalo's home for ESPN Radio. 50,000 watt ESPN 1520.
is your friendly announcer. I have serious news to pass on to everybody. What I'm about to say could mean the world's disaster, could change your joy and laughter to tears and pain. It's that love and need of love today. Don't delay, send yours in right away. Hey, born round, breaking me.
Before it's gone too far, we're kind of going a little bit far there. Listen, I want to try to get something out to you. I know this is Memorial Day and everybody's getting ready to do their barbecues and you're on the road, you're going to see family. I know we celebrate, it's kind of odd, we celebrate Memorial Day on Monday, but that would be the travel day to come back home because you figured you'd be traveling on Friday to go visit people on the weekend and come back home on Monday. Maybe we ought to celebrate Memorial Day on Friday, and then you can come back home on Sunday, and your week would be set up the way you want it to be set up. But then that's me. I'm an administrator. I have issues. Right? So I wanted to talk a little bit about this issue of national health care, universal health care, and the position that seems to be taken by many is that we just can't afford health care. If you listen to Fox News, it's just crazy Democratic craziness and whatnot. Even the Democrats are afraid of what they think it's going to cost for us to have universal health care. So I want to try to put this into a context. My science is very simple. If I have a problem, I try to figure out a way to solve the problem that I know for certain will work. Once I know I have a way that will solve the problem that will work, then I'll start looking at other ways to solve the problem that might work as well or better than the way that I have come up with. But I want to at least keep myself in a position where I know how to solve my problem. So on this issue of healthcare, I did a little looking at the actual dollars that go into healthcare. I took an article, one written by Kevin Rizzo for LawStreet.com. Another that was written by Christine Mahar. When I looked at the cost of single health insurance, a single person's coverage, it's a little bit less than $6,900 a year, of which employers tend to pay about 82% or $5,600. For family coverage, I don't know if you all realize this, family health insurance costs roughly $19,000, a little bit over $19,000 per family. Now, I got to tell you, I started working in 1959. I think I was until 1977 or 1978 before I made $20,000 in gross pay in a year. It costs $20,000 just to buy health insurance if you're in a family. That is just outlandish, you know, from my worldview. So what I tried to do was to figure out how much money does the government already pay? Because we talk about we can't pay for stuff because the government can't pay for it. Well, let's look at how much the government pays right now. Our health care bill is roughly $3.4 trillion. When we look at how much is paid for by employers, the employers pay out of a total of a little bit over $1.5 trillion in employer-paid health insurance, the employers pay for group insurance a little bit over $1.07 trillion for family coverage and a little bit under $350 billion for single coverage. And then employees pay about $436 $1 billion for family coverage, and the employee's share of the cost for single coverage is around $76 billion. So when you add those things together, it's about $1.9 trillion that's paid that way. And of that $1.9 trillion, all of that is being paid either by employers or being paid by employees. Medicare pays a little bit less than $600 billion into the cost for health care. Medicaid pays $368 billion at a cost for Medicaid. States pay about $205 billion of the cost of Medicaid. And then private pay, people just buying insurance on their own outside of their employer group plans, people pay about $300 billion into the healthcare system. So what does this all mean? When I stack all of this up, it appears that the employees and private pay and Medicare beneficiary copays, that's the share that's on us as individuals, it comes to about $800 billion out of the $3.4 trillion in total health care cost. The government is paying the Medicare cost out of the Medicaid cost and so on out of the 7.885% Social Security tax that you all are all paying every time you get a paycheck. You're pay 7.885% of that goes into the Social Security Trust Fund. A portion of that goes to Medicare, and a portion of that goes to Social Security income. So your employer is paying about $1.16 trillion of that money. Let me just break that down just a little bit more finely. What comes out of our pockets at most is about $1.1 trillion. That's the combination of what we pay as the employee share of our group health insurance. That's the portion that we pay in private pay health insurance. That's the portion that we pay in our deductibles on our health insurance. At max, that comes to about $1.1 trillion out of the $3.4 trillion that we pay in total as a nation for our health care cost. And so if you figured out how do we get that $1.1 trillion, if we did that collectively, we have a total of $17.5 trillion in personal income that is earned by Americans. I don't know if you all knew that, but in 2018, Americans earned a total of $17.5 trillion. If we were to raise that $1.1 trillion that we all pay collectively for our collective health care, that would come to about 6% of that $7.5 trillion. So instead of having a FICA bill of 7.885% taken out of your check, you'd have a FICA bill of 13.885% taken out of your check. But in return for that, there'd be no insurance premiums. There'd be nothing. You get sick, you need primary health care, you want to get checked on, you just go to the doctor. And then the doctor bills the state version of this expanded Medicare for all type system, whatever we call it, universal health care. You know, they bill that system. They don't bill a Chubb Life or Anthem or Blue Cross and Blue Shield. There would not be any of that for us as residents of the country.
Removing the profit motive?
Removing it entirely, right? So if you did that, now that's funding the system at the dollar points that I'm talking about, at $3.4 trillion. But if you eliminate insurance companies and all of that cost for billing and claims and arguing and lying and all of that stuff that we do in the current health system, that would knock at least 10% of the cost of the healthcare system out entirely, because you wouldn't be paying all these people doing all of this, you know, claiming and protesting.
You mean CEOs would not be making decisions about my healthcare?
They would have to come and work for a living, like, you know, like the rest of us do. Right? They would not be able to just be pariahs, you know, that are sitting on like just sitting on your back, picking at you, you know, taking dollars out of you and so on. That would eliminate that entirely. So if you could take 10% out of the system, instead of it being $3.4 trillion, now it would only be $3 trillion. And the amount of money you got to come up with as the employees, instead of that money being 1.1 million that or trillion, that money would come down to being more like 800 billion.
I do have a serious question about this. What do you do with the people who unfortunately would lose their jobs who work in the healthcare industry?
So that issue came up, and because I talked about this in another radio program yesterday. That's a big issue. There's probably something in the area of 2.5 million people that are employed in that insurance processing, you know, situation. A lot of those people are going to get picked up in the what I refer to as universal health care or Medicare for all would get picked up in the administration of those systems. So they won't all get displaced because they'll have different employers, but they would all, but a good chunk of them would have jobs. For those that are not picked up, you've got money that is still being spent. So there's going to be demand for labor, and most of those people are going to fit themselves into whatever the growth opportunities are in this expanded healthcare, universal healthcare kind of system. But even if we end up with 500,000 people that don't get picked up, that end up unemployed, we're just going to have to figure out how we help those people get slotted into another part of the job market. We can't make the good or the perfect the enemy of the good. We can't not have health care. We keep missing the point. Our job is not to figure out how to save the health insurance industry. That's not our job. Our job as Americans is to ensure that all Americans have quality, reliable health care, not health insurance, health care. Right? And so we need to create a vehicle that makes that happen for people. So there's going to be some displacement. I mean, if I have a business that's based on me going to other countries and robbing people in other countries and taking their stuff and bringing it back to the United States to process it, that could be my business, but I think a lot of folks would say, gosh, that's not really a good business. We shouldn't be doing that, right?
Like coal mining.
There you go. Right? So if I could get my energy without having to give people cirrhosis of the liver and whatever that is that silicon does, you know, to your lungs and so on, you know, black lung disease and so on, if I could get my energy without doing that to people, yeah, there may be some displaced, you know, coal miners, but I should figure out a different strategy for me to help those displaced coal miners. I shouldn't make my strategy making everybody sick, you know, and dirtying up the environment.
Your wind causes cancer.
Exactly, right? So we've got to get our arms around this thing in a more, in a more humane and intelligent way. So instead of building our models around doing some good while doing a lot of harm, how about we not do harm at all? How about we do this in a better way? Think about how much money we spend right now on pharmaceuticals. In this country, we spend something like $500 billion a year on drugs. Other countries spend, if they were the same size as we are, they'd be spending something in the area of $225 to $250 billion on drugs for their countries. They had the same number of people that we have. Their costs are half of what our costs are. Some countries, their costs are a third of what our costs are. We're basically allowing a profit-making motive influence us to do things that are harming us. So, for example, we have our pharmaceutical companies having goods, instead of pharmaceuticals being manufactured in the United States, where you have as much control as you can possibly have over the manufacturing process, we have it going the opposite way. We have our manufacturing processes being done in countries like India, and then we find that a medication like insulin, which I got to figure somewhere between 15% and 20% of the people in this country are using some form of insulin because so many people have some version of diabetes. They found metal fragments in the insulin. So can you imagine having metal fragments suspended in a liquid that's being put into your veins and moving through your body and whatnot. Your capillaries are getting, you know, sliced up, you know, by these tiny pieces of metal and so on. That would not happen, or at least you would hope that that would not happen in the United States. And certainly if it was happening here, it would get identified more quickly. We would shut down those processes.
Wouldn't happen in France.
But it happens other places and whatnot, right? And it definitely happens in India. So we could stop that from occurring. How am I doing here on time? So let's take our break, and then we'll get Ron on from Cheektowaga, okay, and get his thoughts. If you all stick with us, we will see you inside of the break here at Think Again. Think again.
Would you like to increase your home's value? Do you want to lower your energy bills? Are you in need of affordable financing for your next home improvement project? The CAO Home Improvement Resource Program can help. Just come to one of their monthly HIRP orientation sessions every first and third Wednesday of the month at two convenient locations. HIRP staff will help identify the resources you need to get financed, and they'll even help you with completing your application. Now, you won't know what you qualify for until you call 332-3773. That's 332-3773. Learn about all the home improvement programs you may be eligible for and ask about the affordable financing program that can help turn your house into your dream home. Call 332-3773 for more info. It's the Home Improvement Resource Program, restoring value to neighborhoods across Erie County, one house at a time. Brought to you by the Community Action Organization of Erie County.
With PatriotSoftware.com, accounting and payroll, keep your time and money.
Mike Cappell here, serial entrepreneur. I started my first business in the basement of a factory over 30 years ago. We had no heat and no air conditioning. Instead of customers, our office visitors were rats, birds, flies, and snakes. Our office flooded often, and we used blankets as our office walls. We were broke and needed customers. Years later, I formed my fifth successful business, Patriot Software, which has attracted tens of thousands of customers with our easy accounting and payroll software used by accountants and non-accountants alike. Go to PatriotSoftware.com, use promo code RADIO, and get 2 months of accounting and payroll software free. That's PatriotSoftware.com.
PatriotSoftware.com, accounting and payroll, keep your time and money.
All day, every day. This is Buffalo's home for ESPN Radio. 50,000 watt ESPN 1520.
Call my name, ooh, so sweet, to make your kiss incomplete. When your mood is clear, you quickly change your ways. Then you say I'm untrue.
Are you untrue?
What am I supposed to do?
All right. So listen, I tried to give us a little bit of thought about how we might be able to handle our health care for our country, not our health insurance, but our health care, even if that means some displacement of employees in the health insurance business. I think that we can use our collective acumen to find ways to help people slot themselves in someplace else. But it doesn't make sense for us to burden our society with a health care system that doesn't provide health care for about 10 or 12% of us and really gouges the rest of us in ways that are just extraordinarily damaging for us as a community of people. That's just one thought. There are lots of other things we need to rethink. So I want to get Ron on, and then we'll get John in Rochester on. Ron, how you doing out there?
Oh, not bad. First, I was going to call up about the Mueller. I'm slowly plowing through the Mueller report.
Uh-huh.
And there's so many. That's why when people and I hear the talking points, I have to laugh because there's so many statements in the part one, the conspiracy part, where
mm-hmm.
This office could not establish conclusively. This office could not determine whether or not. This office lacked the necessary information due to the people not cooperating. If that's a ringing exoneration, boy, there's just so much.
Right.
I'm reading this through. I'm thinking, this sounds like something that you would get, well, like with somebody investigating Al Capone or something. You know, everybody knew that he was involved majorly in a whole bunch of murders because they could never really pin anything on him.
Got him on tax evasion, though.
People taking the bullet for him.
Right.
And so I was just one thing aside here, but when you got into the healthcare stuff, I wanted to talk about that. Yeah, health insurance industry would not totally collapse. It would be greatly reduced. But remember, they're not going to cover things in this like forms of cosmetic surgery,
right,
and that type of the only ones they cover, I guess, at least in this countries in Europe that have it, are like, say a little child gets burned in a fire. They might, if he's got bad burns on the face or something, they'll cover that. But I mean, feel like age-related, you know, crow's feet and age spots, and they're not going to cover that. So the insurance will still have, you know, most of those countries allow you to buy that special insurance.
And they would do wraparound insurance. So if you wanted enhanced insurance, you could get that through private insurance.
Right. So you could still do that. And my big fear, though, with this is that I used to get into arguments with doctors over this all the time, is that the doctors, I think, if you're telling them that even if they're probably going to reduce their office costs, because you're only going to have, like right now, the doctors I go to, they have 6 and 7 people dealing with 100 different plans by 10 or 20 companies.
Yep.
You would think they would reduce their office staff to a degree, okay, and be able to take less money, charge less money. But they, oh, man, I've gotten into arguments. Well, you know, I work hard in medical school, and who's going to tell me that I can't charge $320 for a 15-minute consultation that tells me you're dying or something? I mean, really, this is an attitude out there. So you have to also, I don't know how you do it, but I noticed when I used to go to Canada for care and that type of thing, that the attitude of most of the specialists in particular, that's where you have the problem, most of the specialists is totally different. It's because they grew up in that kind of system. They're friendly. They're not condescending. They don't take this attitude that, you know, I got to become a multimillionaire in 10 years or else I'm somehow deprived. And none of them are starving up there. Certainly we don't want the doctors to starve down here either. But, I mean, there's an attitude that I don't know how you're going to deal with that if you really try to put, you know, a cost limitation of a plan in as part of this. And I don't see an awful lot of that proposed by the various plans. When people, you know, talk about Medicare for all and that's fine. But I know doctors used to whine about the rather modest restrictions that Medicare puts on them. You know, you can't charge over a certain amount of money. You got to accept this and that element of it. So that's going to be something you have to deal with. And I think people have to be aware of that. Now, we would hope that if you can hang on to it for 20 or 30 years, that attitude would change. You start to get people into the field, particularly the specialties, that would put people in profit, at least on a same level, instead of just saying, you know, I work hard, I'm the king of all, and I therefore should be able to charge, and nobody should restrict my salary at all. So that's going to be an issue.
I think you're absolutely right about that, but my view of it is we have a extraordinarily difficult problem. I mean, we're talking about $3.4 trillion in this country that we spend just on health care, not counting the rest of the economy. That's almost 18% of the entire economy of the country. This is an unsustainable model that we have going on if the goal is for everybody to have health care. Now, it appears to me that our model is based on the idea that only those people that can afford it can have health care. And those people that completely can't afford it, they get Medicaid, which I think is like you can't get everything done with Medicaid, but most stuff you can get done.
Or just go to the emergency room.
Through Medicaid. Or you just wait until you get so sick that you can't go further. You go to the emergency room and flop, you know, on the emergency, you know, room office. And then somebody else takes responsibility for taking care of you. But that's only going to go so far because they're only going to do enough to patch you up to get you out of the emergency room, and they're going to send you back out into the street, and the same thing's going to happen all over again. It just seems to me that we have to solve the problem first, and then once we figure out at least a way, I'm not saying that my first solution is the only, you know, way to do it. I'm just saying that this is a way to do it that will get you to the finish line, will significantly lower cost and guarantee that everybody has health care. Now, it's up to other people to sit down and say, okay, well, that's a way to go. I don't like that way, but that's a way to go. Are there other ways that we can accomplish the same goal doing it differently? I'm willing to go with whatever people can come up with, but you got to come up with something that actually solves the problem. You can't just come up with something that just patches little pieces of the problem, which is what we've been doing over the past 10 years.
Well, yeah, and unless you really say, and this is a moral issue, that it's never couched in these terms, but unless you're really saying that in the name of capitalism, it's okay for millions of people not to have health care mm-hmm. and for people to die of preventable illnesses, for children to suffer and die, unless that's part of your moral compass, that it doesn't bother you, then, you know, you really should try to do something. We have all these people talking about abortion all the time.
Mm-hmm.
Now, so how terrible that is. Well, isn't it terrible when you have this kind of wealth? Isn't that a moral issue? I never hear conservatives particularly talk about it being a moral issue. How do we provide this? Shouldn't this be a goal? I mean, they just
right.
ignore the issue. They
right.
just want to pretend it'll kind of go away if they don't talk about it.
It's just that we've built essentially a economic predatory culture, you know, that we just, it's like every man for himself, whatever you can get, you know, go get. If you can bias the market or control the market so that you can extract as much wealth out of it as you possibly can, that's what you should be doing. And we end up in these oblong situations where you have people in other countries who don't have anywhere near the apparatus that we have in this country, who are healthier, they live longer, have less infant mortality, they have better, you know, nutrition and so on. That just should not be in a country as sophisticated as the United States. We should not be last. We should be either first or second in every health indice that you can imagine.
Well, our lifespan is actually shortened compared to other countries
yep.
in the past few years, too, which is really, really shocking when you think of it.
Yep. All right, Ron, we got more calls coming in for this last segment, so we only got about 8 minutes to go. Let me get John on, and I just got a request to you, John, and I just want you, I don't know if you heard the early part of the program, but I did do the research I said that I would do. But I want to ask you before we get done if you feel that health care is a right as opposed to being a privilege.
I think it's a privilege.
Wow. Okay. Explain that if you can.
Well, I think society has taken care of the sick and has, in the United States, it's been done for a long time. So it's a privilege to live in this country, and a lot of it's volunteerism. And
Can I just quickly on I've heard people say that before, and I just find it extraordinarily people say that. It's not a privilege to live in the United States. You didn't ask to live in the United States. You didn't choose to live here rather than live someplace else.
Well, you were born here.
No,
I disagree with you on that. I could choose to move to Canada. I could choose to move to Eastern Europe.
But that's not the point. You didn't choose to get born here.
What about the people who are coming in from Mexico and South America?
They're making a choice. But you didn't make a choice. You were born. You're just like me. You were born in this country.
I can make a choice. I'm a privilege to be in this country, and I can make a choice to move out of this country.
We're going to let you lay it out there. That's your frame of reference. I think that's a bizarre, but that's okay. All right. But it's okay. It's okay. It's okay. It's legal for you to have a different opinion, but
right.
I don't think that's an opinion. I think that you get born wherever.
I respect your opinion.
Okay.
And I do.
All right.
But I take the other side of the debate.
So I did do the research that we talked about, and you are right. Income taxes have gone up, or revenue from income taxes has gone up from 2017 to 2018. Income from corporate taxes has gone up from 2017 to 2018. Interestingly, though, is when you look at the year-over-year increase in income taxes from 2013 to 2018, what you find is that you had higher increases each year until you got to the year-over-year 2017 to 2018, then the increase is lower, both for personal income taxes and for corporate income taxes. So
I agree with you on that. Yeah.
Right. Because as you know, money counts itself. You can't lie to money. You can lie to yourself, but you can't lie to money. Money just counts itself.
I never lie to myself.
So, but my point is that the Trump administration rolled out this enacted plan. They rolled this out with the assertion that it was going to free up so much money in the economy that we would end up growing the GDP so much higher that we would end up with significantly more money and less debt as a consequence. So we do have more money, but we would have had more money if we had not done this. We would have had more money in terms of federal revenue, number one. And number two, our deficits have gone extremely high. Our deficits in 2018 were roughly $780 billion. It's going to be above $1,090 billion in the year that ends September 30th of this year. This is as a consequence of the lost revenue as a result of these tax cuts. At least that seems to me to be, you know, what is occurring here. We're getting worse rather than getting better. And in addition to that, we increased our defense spending. If you look at defense spending from the period of 2007 to today, we have almost more than $500 billion that we're spending on defense over that time period. At a time when we were losing money because the country was collapsing economically, we were actually increasing our costs for defense spending as if that was going to be the stimulus that would regenerate the economy.
Well, so, we have a lot of enemies out there, China being our biggest one, I believe, right now, and some of the Middle East countries like Iran. But I agree that the revenue grew at a very slow rate between, 2017 and 2018, but going forward, it's going to increase by 6% between this year and next year.
You keep saying that.
Management and budget.
What's going to create the 6% increase in revenue?
The stimulation of the economy. If you put the more of the resources in the hands of the private sector and take it out of the government, you're going to see the private sector is just more efficient, and it's going to produce more tax revenue. You're going to have a lot of business. For instance,
we've done that already, and it didn't produce that outcome.
But it's showing, at least the Office of Management and Budget has shown that the tax revenue will be increasing by 6% between this year and next year. And that's a sign that this, I think, will get even better because
Productive. But John, history is the best predictor of the future.
Well, I'm just going by the Office of Management and Budget.
I hear that. I'm simply saying, I actually pulled the records from 2000 to 2018.
So you saw that there were
periods where we had tax cuts, you know, under the Bush administration. No disrespect, but he claimed that because the Clinton administration put us on a path to a $2 trillion surplus, which we didn't really have at that point, by the way. We were just on a path to get to a $2 trillion surplus. The Bush administration said we must be taxing people too much, so he started lowering taxes. So he lowered taxes, and at the end of the day, we ended up with less money and more debt. And more deficits.
I looked at it differently. I didn't see that at all. I saw the tax cuts produce more tax revenue from what I saw in the statistics.
I'll go back and I'll pull those years out again and look at it. Listen, man, they got us on the hook. You know what happens when we get to the end of the hour. But I appreciate you calling, John. And I just wanted to keep faith with you that I would do what I said I would do. I'll take a look at that again for next week. Thank you all out there. Have a wonderful Memorial Day. This is a time for us all to get reacquainted with each other. Spring finally sprung. Matt, we actually have something that looks like spring, right? So go out, enjoy yourself, enjoy your families. Please be safe. Look forward to talking to you all next week here at Think Again. Think Again.
You've been listening to Think Again with L. Nathan Hare, sponsored by the Community Action Organization of Erie County. Be sure to tune in again next week at this same time for more Think Again.
You're listening to the official voice of the UB Bulls, ESPN 1520, WWKB Buffalo, a radio.com sports station.
At Indeed, we believe a resume is a great way to see an overview of a candidate. But you're not hiring a resume, you're hiring a person. That's why Indeed offers tools that help bridge the gap between a candidate and the resume. Like skill tests, which let you actually see a candidate's abilities in action to make sure they're a good fit for the job. See beyond the resume with Indeed. Experience Indeed for yourself today and get a free sponsored job upgrade on your first posting at Indeed.com/promo. Terms and conditions apply.
Does your dog itch, scratch, stink, or shed like crazy? Come to Dynavite for help.
Order a 90-day supply of Dynavite.
Everything we tried failed except the Dynavite.
Pick up two bottles of Super Mega Fish Oil.
Get the third bottle free. Packed with omega-3, DHA, and EPA fatty acids.
Super Mega is great for your dog's immune system, healthy skin, and soft, shiny fur.
Dogs love it. Try Super Omega Fish Oil.
Buy two, get one free.
At Dynavite.com.
DINOVITE.com.
Summer is an especially beautiful time in Western New York. What better way to enjoy it than in a new Lincoln from Westher Ford Lincoln in Amherst during the Westher Spring into Summer Sales Event, offering great deals on Lincoln's entire range of luxury vehicles, featuring Lincoln quality in every detail of design and execution, such as a brand new 2019 Lincoln Nautilus front-wheel drive with heated front seats, hands-free liftgate, Sync 3, and more for just $398 a month. $398 a month. 36-month lease with only a $1,395 down payment plus first payment, tax, acquisition, and registration fees due at signing. No security deposit required. On approved credit through Lincoln Automotive Financial Services. Not all buyers qualify. 7,500 miles per year allowable, 20 cents per mile thereafter. Unless provided by manufacturer, lessee is responsible for all maintenance and excess wear and tear. Ends May 31st. Westher Ford Lincoln in Amherst on Millersport Highway just north of UB. If you're thinking Lincoln, think Westher. Spring into summer in style.
Welcome to Western New York.
The following is paid programming. Opinions expressed are not necessarily those of this radio station, its advertisers, or sponsors.
It's time for Car Connection, your mid-afternoon get-up-and-go automotive calling program with your host, Motormouth Niall Jenkins. Motormouth invites you to sit back, relax, and pick up your telephone while you join him for an awesome time of great car care tips and honest answers to your automotive maintenance and repair questions with professional and friendly advice to save you time, money, and a few bloody knuckles. This week's edition of Car Connection on ESPN 1520 AM is being brought to you by our good friends.